Roll 10. Okay. Roll 10, shot 1, take 1, Peter Braystrip.
Oh!
Now, Peter, the first question which I would like to ask you is not the first one we were just rehearsing, but let's go to LBJ. What was the impact of the media coverage of TEP on LBJ and on his decision not to seek re-election in March? And remember to sort of rephrase this question in your answer.
Lyndon Johnson was always very sensitive to what he saw on the TV screen. As you will recall, he had a console set up in the Oval Office in which all three network news shows could be seen simultaneously. In those days, they appeared simultaneously. He was very sensitive to what he saw in the press. This was true from the start of the war, and it was true at Tet. We know now that Lyndon Johnson and his staff were shaken in the first week of February, right after the attacks in Vietnam on the cities by the Viet Cong. They were shaken not only by the attacks, but by their treatment on television. And so, possibly as a result, was the rest of political and journalistic Washington. When the president is shaken and shows it, it affects the whole political community in Washington, and this was very important. But I think the effects of the media coverage, and I contend that this media coverage was distorted. It showed Hanoi as, let me repeat that. It portrayed the Tet Offensive by Hanoi as resulting in a disaster for the Allies in South Vietnam. The historians now have concluded that it was a military and political defeat for Hanoi and for the Viet Cong in the South. Such claims were not made with any persistence at the time of Tet by Lyndon Johnson after the first couple of days. The administration, which had conducted a kind of orchestrated propaganda campaign designed to convince the American public that progress was being made in Vietnam after 3 years of war. This propaganda campaign included a speech by General Westmoreland before the National Press Club in November of 1967. It included speeches by Lyndon Johnson and by the principal leaders of the administration, all during the last half of 1967, designed to shore up public opinion in favor of the war. However, at Tet, the administration was shocked into a kind of candor. They did not claim victory over the communists at Tet so much as they claimed, and not very strongly and not very often, that the communists had not achieved a victory. There's a difference between claiming a victory for your side and claiming in a more subdued way a defeat for the other. Much of the media, especially on television, did not make this distinction. The television people and the commentators and the pundits in the newspapers immediately harked back to that propaganda campaign of late 1967. And contrasted the administration's prior optimism with the undeniable surprise and undeniable initial military setbacks to the Allied cause in South Vietnam. They did not listen carefully to what the administration was saying during Tet. They, in effect, wrote off what the administration was saying at Tet very cautiously, as simply being more of the same propaganda. So the media was kind of shocked, and the administration was paying the price for creating a credibility gap over the previous years of the war when the crunch came at Tet. It was kind of one wrong by the administration being answered by another wrong by the media. Two wrongs don't make a right, and that's essentially what happened in the media portrayal of the Tet Offensive in February and March 1968.
Peter, one of the phrases that was used in the war over and over and over again is light at the end of the tunnel. Do you really think your message ends up suggesting that Tet showed that there was light at the end of the tunnel?
Not at all. The other problem with discussions now of the Tet Offensive is that both opponents of the war and administration figures of various persuasions, the administration was far from united on what to do about the war, but almost everybody involved in the Tet Offensive claims that the Tet Offensive showed something about that light at the end of the tunnel. My argument in the book is that the Tet Offensive per se showed us very little that was new about the war. It did not show that victory was any closer or any further away. It did not show us suddenly that the war was foolish, as the Dubs claim. There were no great revelations observable at the time of Tet that should have caused anybody to make up their minds one way or the other about the rights and wrongs of the war. It was an occasion, a time of crisis, particularly in Washington, which was exploited by both Hawks, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and by Dubs in the Senate, Senator Fulbright, and within the administration, some of the whiz kids in the Pentagon. Everybody was trying to exploit this crisis to change things, which was the last thing that Lyndon Johnson wanted to do at Tet or for the 3 years prior to Tet. Lyndon Johnson essentially sought to buy time. Lyndon Johnson essentially sought to buy time for those 2 months. He hunkered down in the White House. He was apprehensive about the political effects of this crisis out there in Vietnam, even though that crisis ebbed rather swiftly. He was worried then, as always, about the domestic political repercussions, how he would look in the history books, how he would look in terms of his great society programs. He was not what you would consider an enthusiast for the war in Vietnam. So he was continually trying to satisfy everybody. He tried to do this at Tet. He tried to satisfy the Hawks with a little more reinforcement for Vietnam. Okay. Link.